This is Amanda Buckle, and you're listening to Catch the Current. We are recapping Seafood Expo Global, and by we, I mean the team at Undercurrent News. Up first with me is Louis Harkel. Louis, we had you on the podcast before the show, before Seafood Expo Global, and we talked about the anticipation of meeting with these Chinese contacts in the midst of what's going on with the Trump trade war and all these tariffs. So 2 days on the show floor, what have these conversations been like?
Yeah, so the tariffs have had a big impact on China's seafood sector. Bear in mind, the US is the largest single country seafood export market for China, taking about $2 billion worth of exports last year. So about 10% of total Chinese exports. So yesterday and today, I was speaking with Chinese companies to find out how they're coping. And specifically, I was interested in Chinese tilapia companies because looking at tilapia, much more than 10% goes to the US. It's actually closer to 30%. And this totaled last year $420 million. So much more exposed than many other Chinese seafood segments. And that's not to say that every company is facing a 30% drop in sales. And that was evident from speaking with them. Like one company I spoke with, it was closer to 90%
wow.
of its shipments to the US. So for that company, 170% tariffs is pretty devastating. And they're clearly downbeat about the situation. So yeah, and they were shipping 700 to 800 containers a year. So now they're virtually down to nothing. They still had the workers living on site because often these companies, they can be in quite remote locations and the workers will be traveling from, you know, different parts of China, often migrant workers to live on site in dormitories. And so, yeah, they haven't been sent home and they hope that basically the halt in production will be temporary and that, you know, following negotiations between the US and China, tariffs might be reduced or removed. But then, you know,
I feel like I heard on the floor too a lot of I hope it's temporary. We're thinking it's temporary. It's everyone's really hopeful that it's gonna stick, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's just a sense that, you know, Trump almost wears his unpredictability with the badge of honor. And, you know, that's very apparent for everyone. Like, you know, but it means that they just don't know. And that was kind of like the, yeah, kind of takeaway from speaking with them. But then, you know, other companies, they're sending just 20 to 30% of shipments to the US. So for them, you know, it's still a big deal. Like, there's no doubt about it. It's still a big hit to sales. But they were just, you know, clearly just less concerned about it. And then the conversation was also then moving on to that, you know, what level of tariffs could they compete in the US market at? You know, one packer I spoke with reckoned that a tariff of about 50 to 60% would be just about manageable. Bear in mind, it was about 25% before. So it's still a big jump, but Chinese tilapia is pretty unique. You know, no other country in the world produces the volumes that China does. It's very cheap, so the tariff doesn't add up to a huge amount in absolute terms. And then also, you know, you look at where tariffs also could end up being, you know, levied, and 90% on Vietnam was first proposed on the reciprocal tariff day announcement. And, you know, the US imports a lot of pangasius from Vietnam, and pangasius is probably the most comparable product to Chinese tilapia. So, you know, if those tariffs come into effect on Vietnam, and then if China and US can strike a deal, tilapia suddenly becomes viable again. So, you know, it's just very uncertain.
Yeah. A journalist's dream event.
Yeah, it makes for, you know, good copy and, yeah, a continuous flow of stories for us, certainly.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Louis, for following up on this with us. All right, so in addition to Louis chasing stories on China and all the tariffs, news broke from the show floor that American Seafoods ended its membership with Genuine Alaska Pollock Producers, GAP. So leading into Seafood Expo Global, the Genuine Alaska Pollock Producers announced that they're looking for their program partner funding. And at the same time, so they're releasing this amount of funding, the next day, we find out that American Seafoods, one of their member companies, has actually pulled out and ended its membership. So that was probably one of the big shockers for me from the show. I know I was talking with a lot of people in the pollock industry. And for GAP, I mean, it was launched in 2003 to build demand and awareness for Alaska pollock. And American Seafoods has certainly benefited from it. I mean, I think dating back to 2019, they were among the recipients of a $1 million investment from the association, which they used to launch two initiatives to bring Alaska pollock to new channels and customers. But them pulling out of GAP comes at a really interesting point because GAP also just received some funding from the USDA, in which they're putting towards Colombia and Brazil and India and building the markets up in those areas. So again, there's some real opportunity for growth there. So it's been really interesting to see American Seafoods pull out. I reached out to American Seafoods CEO Inga Andreasen and Vice President of Fisheries and Sustainability Trent Hartle, who would not comment on the record to Undercurrent. However, GAP CEO Craig Morris did release a statement saying that our Great Wild Alaska pollock industry remains united in its commitment to sustain for the future and continues to strongly support the efforts to build demand and awareness for wild Alaska pollock. And they said that they're going to continue to advocate on behalf of the entire industry. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on, as especially the partnership program hits off. But that wasn't the only breaking news from the show. Our editor-in-chief, Tom Seaman, has been running the show ragged, Tom.
I try my best.
So what was the big story for you this week so far?
The big story was one that's been cooking for a while, if you'll forgive the terrible pun, because we reported a few weeks ago that Pesca Facil, which is a Spanish shrimp cooking company, was looking for a new investor. And the story behind this is very interesting because their still current investor is the Rincon family, which is a Venezuelan business family which built up Grupo Lamar, which ended up being Venezuela's largest shrimp company, very successful business, employing thousands of people. And then very controversially in October, I think last year, the Venezuelan government accused them, with no real evidence, of orchestrating a coup and being involved with opposition parties. And essentially, they had to flee the country. And then the Venezuelan government took over Grupo Lamar. And since Grupo Lamar's exports have basically gone to nothing, I think, from the country, because it's very difficult for a government to manage a large business, that left the Rincon family with a stake in Pesca Facil, which is a company based in Spain, turning over around 30 million euros, with, in fact, a holding company which the Rincon family own 80% of, owns 51% of Pesca Facil, and then the founding family own the rest. And there's been a kind of auction process for the company, or for their stake in the company, run by Luis Comella, who is the president of the Pesca Facil and also owns 20% of this holding company with Lamar. I mean, this is very complicated, and I hope I'm explaining it okay after a long day at the show. So I spoke with Luis today. He cryptically messaged me saying, the deal is done. And I ran over to the stand, got the story. The investor in the company is an Ecuadorian farmer and processor, which is called Grupo Diezmar, apparently turning over $250 million, exporting 60,000 tons of shrimp a year. The deal isn't closed, but it's agreed. So there'll be obviously a final period of negotiations, but the price has been set. And then they hope to close the deal in a couple of months. Luis was very relieved because obviously he's been running around trying to sort this kind of situation out and get a new investor into the company, which will also obviously bring raw material supply because this is a farmer. And what he explained to me is the arrangement will be Pesca Facil has to exclusively buy from Diezmar in Ecuador, so they can't go out and buy from other processors, so they're tied in that way. But then at the same time, Diezmar has to sell to Pesca Facil in Spain and Portugal, so it's kind of a good relationship between the two companies. And he was very excited about the deal closing and being able to focus on growing the business. So yeah, and it will mean that then the Rincon family, the Venezuelan family that had to flee the country after their company was really taken off them, will then be divested from this business. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there next. Another kind of subtext to this is part of a trend of Ecuadorian companies looking to really diversify away from China. For some Ecuadorian companies, they're sending, maybe 60-70% of their shrimp to China. The Chinese market is, not in great shape because the economic slowdown in the country. So they're all looking to, shift their sales more to Europe. And this is, a company then actually, integrating and getting a sales presence in Europe. And then obviously also to the US, where, Ecuador has a major advantage. Well, all the shrimp supply countries are currently at 10%, but obviously the Asian countries, India, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Thailand, they'll all go to much higher tariff levels as things currently stand. I mean, there are free trade deals being negotiated, I'm sure, but as it stands, they'll all currently go to much higher levels on July the 9th, and Ecuador will remain at 10%. But I think even if they do deals and remain at 10%, Ecuador still has a major advantage in the US market because it takes maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks for Ecuador to ship to the US market, and it takes 45 days, say, from India to ship. So it's much quicker for them to get to the US market, and it's also much cheaper because they have lower freight rates. So, yeah, there's a lot of advantages there for Ecuador in the US, and that's been a topic I've been discussing with multiple Ecuadorian companies. They're all looking to diversify away from China, and the US and Europe are other targets. So it's been an interesting show to explore that topic.
That story and more in the show notes of Catch the Current. We heard from Louis Harkel. We heard from Tom Seaman. Now joining us right now is Maria Fejo Ramos, a reporter with Undercurrent News. Maria, you've been walking the show floor for the past few days. What are your big takeaways?
So basically, if someone had told me a few years ago when I started in the seafood industry that it would become the most unpredictable roller coaster of my whole life, I think I would have laughed, to be honest. But here we are. So, well, starting with Argentina, which is one of the hot topics now, with everything that's going on there, with all the vessels stop. Well, the red shrimp sector is facing a crisis now, like of epic proportions. And, well, we already reported about it before, but it's still a thing. So many people worried about it. So despite the official start of the shrimp season on March 17, not a single vessel has sailed. So the reason, well, the high operational costs and low international prices have made it economically unfeasible to operate. So imagine, the cost of the crew in Argentina represents about 60% of the production costs. Per vessel trip, while internationally it goes between 30 and 33%, more or less. So imagine it's quite a thing there.
Yeah.
And then going to Ecuador, Ecuadorians are more optimistic, which is always a good thing, given all the circumstances. But Banamex dream production figures have been up at around 20% year-on-year in the last few months. And prices are remaining stable. So always great to hear good news from them. And yeah, then moving south and onto a different species, the squid seems to be also in trouble. So overfishing and climate changing and changing temperatures have drastically reduced the numbers and sizes, leading to a sharp decline in catches. So over in the Falkland Islands, the fishery is currently facing uncertainty as the second fishing season approaches. Many of you might know that or not, but last year the second season was cancelled completely, so they are worried about this happening again this year or what is going to happen.
You weren't kidding before when you said it was a roller coaster.
Yeah, true. So, yeah, these environmental concerns and also the geopolitical tensions cast a shadow over this upcoming season. So this leaves many in the industry just wondering what is going to happen next. So, and then there's Peruvian jumbo squid, which once was a reliable source of squid for the global market. While I've heard there's been a slight improvement in catch rates, it seems, the overall situation remains quite precarious. So the industry is grappling with fluctuating stocks and inconsistent fishing seasons. So this is making it very difficult for processors to maintain steady production. And amidst all this, the hot topic of the last few months, the U.S. seafood industry is facing its own set of challenges as well.
You can say that again.
The recent imposition of sweeping tariffs by the Trump administration has sent ripples through the market. So most people I've spoken to today and yesterday are very concerned about the potential impact of increased costs and disrupted supply chains, and about who's going to absorb all these increases. So what does this translate into? Well, uncertainty is currently the only certainty. So, as I sometimes say, what a time to be alive.
Last but not least, we have Matilda Marighetti, who's covering Latin America for us. What have you heard on the show floor?
Hi, everyone. So, yesterday was definitely the busiest day of the show so far, and some people are already leaving today, so tomorrow will be quieter. But I went to speak to some Latin American companies, and Peruvian companies have definitely been struggling with the shortage of jumbo flying squid. And as Maria just said, catches have slightly recovered, but the sizes are small. But as some say, it is better than nothing. Some companies manage to diversify and sort of process different species. But this year, they hope that their volumes will recover. European processors also have been worried about the lack of squid supply from Peru and the Falklands with the cancellation of the season last year. Octopus prices as well are at record high. And so the winter season in Morocco and Mauritania has recently finished, but demand is really high both in Europe and the US. So we've seen really high prices at record high, higher than in 2018. Although some of the processors managed to secure supply from earlier in the season when prices were not as high. But this might also impact demand going forward. So let's see how this will play out.
Thank you. So the Undercurrent team has been busy knocking out content after content. All the links are in the show notes, so be sure to check that out. And we'll see you back here next week. Thanks, everyone.